Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. My name is Gil McGregor. I am joined, as always, by my guy, Kyle Irving. KI, what's going on, man?
It's draft week, man. I mean, always an exciting one. Always one that I look forward to, but it is also always one of the busiest weeks of the year for me, work-wise. So, you know, work's already picking up this week. I say that with a smile on my face for now. They got it broken down. It's 2 days for me this year, so I won't have to stay up until, well, I mean, no more 3 a.m.s the way that I was doing it on the East Coast covering the draft. You know, God bless covering sports on the West Coast for nights like that. But, you know, they're still broken up into 2 days for me to try and lighten the workload. So Wednesday and Thursday are going to be busy, but can't wait for it to get here.
Yeah, I've always said draft season is chaos season, and this season, this draft season, is no different. Might as well just straight up get into it. The 2024 NBA draft class is not your normal NBA draft class. I know last year we had a surefire generational number one pick, and he lived up to everything. And even the year before, there was some debate, but you were very steadfast in thinking Paolo Banchero should be number one. This year is a little different. Alexander Sarr, I have to continue to remind myself not to call him by his brother's name, but Alex Sarr, Zachary Risacher, Nikola Topic, you got Stephon Castle, Donovan Kling, and a lot of guys who could theoretically hear their name go number one, but a lot of people think it's probably going to be Risacher because Alex Sarr and his agency want no parts of the Atlanta Hawks, who by the miracle, a very big upset, went from 10th best odds in the lottery to winning the lottery. I think it's the only second or third time in franchise history they're selecting first overall. And the Raptors did feel the wrath of that. That's how they ended up losing their pick. But I digress. What do you make of this weirdness around the draft class? And is it just really because there's no surefire number one pick that the rest of the draft class is weird, or those two things independent of one another?
Yeah, I really think that, you know, this year's draft class is like, it almost has a different type of potential. Like there is, you know, a lot of people are already comparing it to like 2013, which is in our lifetime, probably the worst draft class that we have ever seen, where, you know, Anthony Bennett was the number one overall pick. He has a case, you know, no offense to any Canadians that are listening that have strong feelings towards Anthony Bennett, but has a case for, you know, one of the biggest busts in NBA history. I mean, the guy played 151 games. He averaged like 4 points per game and he was out of the league in 4 seasons. And you know what, honestly, it wasn't just Anthony Bennett either. Like the picks after him, I just wrote something on it over at the Sporting News. That's going to be published, you know, by the time that you hear this podcast. But, you know, Victor Oladipo is the only player in the lottery that made an all-star team in that draft.
Crazy.
Giannis Antetokounmpo famously went 15th in that draft. Rudy Gobert went 27th in that draft. So, you know, there was some diamond in the rough international star power. But like outside of those guys, there wasn't even a lot of role player talent in that draft. Like, you know, there was, off the top of my head, like Dennis Schroeder was in that draft. Kelly Olynyk was in that draft. Like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was in that draft. You know, I can't even think of guys beyond that. And that's not exactly a glamorous list of names. So, you know, that's why, like, when this is labeled as a bad draft, and there have been quotes out there from, and you know, executives that know a hell of a lot more than I do, saying that, you know, this draft class reminds them of 2013. But like, as I'm going through these prospects and going through like some of these young players that obviously have a lot of like work to do in improving their game, there are also guys that are really good at certain skills that I think will make them, even at their floor, role players in the NBA. And that's where, to me, I almost gravitate a little bit more towards the 2020 draft class that was also labeled a bad draft. You know, that draft class had Anthony Edwards at the top. It had LaMelo Ball at the top. Two guys that everybody felt like had star caliber, franchise cornerstone caliber potential. But beyond that, that was supposed to be a bad draft. Well, in hindsight, that draft class has produced Tyrese Halliburton, Tyrese Maxey, Desmond Bane, Jaden McDaniels. Like there is a lot of, you know, I mean, it goes even longer than that. I could go on and on about guys that are still contributing to their NBA teams right now that they were selected by. Peyton Pritchard, Devin Vassell, like there are a lot of guys. But, you know, that was none of those guys were supposed to be in the position that they're in right now. It was labeled a bad draft. People weren't excited about it. That started getting the 2013 tag of like, is this the worst draft class since 2013? And to me, this year's draft class has a similar type of potential as the 2020 draft class. It doesn't have the star power at the top that Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball had. It doesn't have it, it most likely will not have a Giannis Antetokounmpo or a Rudy Gobert either if we're comparing it to 2013. But I do think that in terms of depth, there are a lot of guys in this draft class that have really solid skills that will contribute to NBA rotations, not necessarily right away for some cases, but it will be for other cases. But I do think that there are some players in this draft class that we're going to look back in 5 years and be like, you know what, maybe this draft wasn't as bad as we thought it was.
So when you say that, let's start at the top. You know, we talked about Sarr, Risa Shea. I know you're really high on Castle, Topic. You know, I talk about each and every one of those guys, but when you talk about the guys at the top of the list, where do you see them peaking, or who do you think has the highest ceiling, and what is that ceiling of this draft class?
That's a great question, because the reason that Alex Sarr is number one on my big board isn't necessarily because I think he has the highest ceiling. I think he's the number one on my big board right now because I feel like at his floor, like he is ready to contribute at the NBA level right now as a like rim protector, as a lob catcher, as a rim running big that's fluid and athletic and has the size and the length and the coordination to fit today's style in the NBA. And, you know, he has budding offensive skills that he's shown, you know, a perimeter shooting touch and post shooting touch and ability to handle the ball a little bit. Like those are the swing skills that are like that could take him to like all stardom or superstardom. But, you know, the reason he's number one on my big board going into the draft is because at his floor, I think he is someone who can make, I'm going to use Derek Lively as an example, you know, that type of impact. Jaren Jackson Jr. is actually the player that I use as a player comparison on my big board. Which, you know, if you go over to thesportingnews.com, I did do player comparisons for every player ranked on my big board in this draft class. Don't treat it like the Bible because player comparisons are tough to make. It's more to give you an idea of who that player plays like. And Alex Sarr, I think if he reaches his maximum potential, could be a Jaren Jackson Jr. type player that is protecting the rim, knocking down threes, you know, running the floor, able to switch a little bit on the perimeter and defend, you know, so that's why he is number one on my big board as of right now. But, you know, some of the other guys that you mentioned, like I am really high on Stephon Castle. I think that he is like the type of jack of all trades type prospect who he wants to play point guard. He played more off the ball in college, but he has the size to defend multiple positions at a very high level. He's an intelligent defender. He can do damage without the ball in his hands, scoring off of cuts. We saw him grinding for like offensive rebounds, crashing the glass and stuff in the NCAA tournament to help UConn win a national championship. And then again, we talk about swing skill. Like if he can knock down shots, knock down perimeter, like knock down threes consistently, like we're looking at a player who could end up being the best player in this draft class and a multi-time all-star. So, you know, no matter what player you were to bring up in front of me and ask, you know, what is your thoughts on him? Like the answer is probably going to be, they do this really well. If they can do this really well, this will be their potential. And this is like who they could be. But like, you know, that is there for a lot of these guys. These are swing skills that will make or break their NBA career. And I think, again, that goes back to why this is kind of considered, at least by like NBA exec scouts, stuff like that, a bad draft, because there's a lot of volatility with these players and their potential.
The one thing I think that is kind of consistent with 2013, 2020, and this year, 2024, for different reasons, but like, you know, you think about Giannis and Rudy Gobert, like you're always kind of taking a risk when it's, you know, players from overseas, you don't necessarily know who they're playing against or how they project, especially Giannis. That is just such an unprecedented pick and story with him playing at a lower level and becoming who he became. Nobody really could have predicted that. I guess the Raptors did see it, and the Bucks obviously thought he was going to be something. And 2020 was guys you couldn't really evaluate the same way because the pandemic really just impacted the pre-draft process to the point where it really did, and the draft wasn't until November. That really just messed up everything as we know it as far as the draft goes. And I feel like this year there's an interesting blend of international guys. I'm sure a lot of the names that I've really focused on pronouncing correctly so far, and they're much more international prospects in this draft, mixed with a blend of guys who maybe it would have helped to see a little more of at the collegiate level. You know, maybe, you know, and we can go back to our jinx from March, but maybe had we seen Kentucky in a few more games in the tournament, we'd have more to say about Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham. You know, guys who kind of battle injuries and battle certain things this year, so to speak. That being said, I guess more so about the international prospects, Risa Shea, who could end up being the number one pick if he goes to Atlanta, or what he brings to a team. I know, again, you're pretty high on Nikola Topic, but similar to what we said about the 2013 class, everybody thought Nerlens Noel was going to go number one. He had a torn ACL. He was rehabbing. Topic is rehabbing a partially torn ACL. So everybody kind of has either it's a swing skill or it's like, you know, a big thing that they kind of have to overcome, be it an injury or whatever as it goes. What are your thoughts on the international guys? Because I know there's some other ones that are a little bit deeper in the bag that people might not be as familiar with, who you're also pretty high on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I want to start with Topic because I do have him at number two on my big board. And I decided to keep that because that's my evaluation of him healthy. On my mock draft, he is not going to be the number two projected pick. Like, he's going to inevitably fall because he has a partially torn ACL. Now, I also feel like he's going to fall right into the lap of somebody, and maybe it's San Antonio that desperately needs a point guard and can afford to be patient and take a swing on someone like that. Like, you know, maybe he ends up there and that ends up being the best possible situation for him. But I do think that he is someone who, you know, again, you talk about a swing skill, like he's a point guard who can't really shoot right now. So like at the basis, like it's like, all right, well, what is his ceiling? Can he be an all-star as a point guard who can't really shoot? But, you know, he's extremely explosive. He's got solid breakaway speed. He gets downhill. He lives in the paint. He can score in the paint. He's got good size for a point guard. He defends at a high level. He's an extremely, extremely intelligent pick and roll ball handler and passer. Like I'm high on those aspects of his game. I'm curious to see how, you know, a knee injury like that obviously affects things like his explosiveness, his first step, like things that allow him to live in the paint the way that he does. But, you know, again, like he can't really shoot right now, just like flat out. I'm not going to, you know, try and paint it a different way. Like that's just the honesty of it. And it's crazy to say that about someone who's number two on, like, you know, my big board. Like I think that's where a lot of people feel like, you know, even Alex Saar, I think there was a quote at one point. It was like, he's a great player. You'd probably be like the seventh or eighth best prospect in a regular draft class. And I think that's the case for a lot of these guys. But then, yeah, like talk about like Zachary Risacher. Like, you know, he's someone that he's proved he can shoot the cover off the ball. He has the size, length, everything that you're looking for in a wing in today's NBA. But he was also super streaky throughout the year. Like he started out the year like knocking down everything. He was shooting like 40 something percent from three. And everybody was like, oh, okay, look at this guy. That's how he shot up to, you know, being in the conversation for the number one pick. And then he went ice cold. And he was ice cold and he started to slide down on big boards and mock drafts and things like that. And then like right before the playoffs came for the LNB Pro A, like Risacher started shooting like crazy again. He had some monster, like one of his most well-rounded games of the entire season in the playoffs. And now he's in consideration and the favorite to be the number one pick. So, you know, these are guys who, again, like they all have tangible strengths that are very evident, and that's why they're in the conversation for top five picks the way they are. But they also have glaring weaknesses. Like Risacher is not exactly like a known defender at this point. He's honestly, for someone that is as good as he is as a shooter, he's not much of a shot creator. Like he's not like the fluid shot creator that you would expect from someone that would be picked number one overall, that you would expect to be like a number one scoring option. Like I don't think he's there yet. I don't think he's at that point yet. I always try and throw out, again, player comparisons, plays like to like, you know, allow listeners to get an idea of who these guys are. Like Topic, I'd said plays like Tony Parker. Like he reminds me of Tony Parker a little bit in the sense that he's a guard that lives in the paint, solid playmaker, struggled with his jump shot a little bit, but obviously Tony Parker figured that out and ended up using, you know, the mid-range to his advantage, things like that. Like Risacher to me is kind of like Chris Middleton. Like that's like his game. Okay. You know, he's not the playmaker that Chris Middleton has turned into, but I'm saying like younger in his career, like kind of like a wingman type Chris Middleton. So, you know, those are the international players that really intrigue me. And then, you know, there's another one, you know, a little bit further down on my big board, but still a projected lottery pick. And that's Teodani Salon. Like he is a 6'10 forward who is a slasher and he has the size, he has the athleticism. He has the mobility. He scores off of cuts. He catches lobs. He can defend multiple positions. But then that swing skill again is he's shown flashes of having a smooth jumper. He just, the numbers don't show that he's a good shooter. So like, you know, he's someone who might go in the late lottery, or maybe a team like OKC who has a billion draft picks can take a swing on him and afford to be patient and let him kind of develop in their system. And then, you know, years down the line, it's like, well, why was no one talking about this guy? And it's like, well, because he had a lot of things he need to work on, but if he polishes those skills, he's going to be really, really good. So, you know, I think just in terms of the international prospects, that kind of is part of the reason why a lot of people, like the general public, is bored with this draft class, because these aren't guys that were in front of them, you know, performing on the March Madness stage, performing on the conference tournament stage, watching them on ESPN, things like that. Like you're not watching these guys play. So, you know, it's easy to kind of just set them aside, but they have a ton of talent, obviously. And that's why they're projected lottery picks.
Before we go to a break, there's one more international prospect I want to ask you about. And he did play on the March Madness stage. He played in the biggest game of the season. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. Now, our guy Zach Edey seems to have the widest range of all the draft prospects. I'm not going to ask you to predict where you think he'll land, because it could really realistically be anywhere between 7 and 21, which is wild. But what do you think the best fit for him is, and do you think he's addressed some of the concerns that there were last year as he kind of tested the draft waters?
Definitely. I'm glad you asked about Zach Edey, because I like talking about like the progression that he made, because like yeah. I was fully in the camp that like he has reached his ceiling as an NBA prospect. I'm not sure that he can do anything to really improve his draft stock. He'll maybe be a second round pick. Like, this was my thoughts before this past season. And then after the NCAA tournament run that he just had, where like he literally only sat on the bench for, I think it was 3 total minutes from the Sweet 16 all the way to the national championship, like showed that he had the conditioning down, showed that he was more mobile than he had ever been in the past. You know, he's got to work on his left hand. Like, he still has areas of his game that he needs to work on. But I do think that like at his floor, he has proved that he could be like a specialist as a backup big, or, you know, an interim starter, like that type of player who is capable of handling that type of workload, which at one point, you know, like Boban Marjanovic was a player that like people would compare him to as like a very, like, you know, a specialist. Like, he's a big that goes out there to foul and rebound, and that's pretty much it. Like, Zach Edey has proved that he can be much more than that. He has proved worthy of being a top 20 or so pick. You know, in terms of best fits, you and I talked about this a little bit earlier. Like, I think a team like the New Orleans Pelicans would be a great fit for him, because Jonas Valanciunas is not getting any younger, and they could use another big like that, that just eats rebounds and takes up space in the paint and is big and physical. You know, I think the Lakers are a team where, like, you know, they don't really have a backup big behind Anthony Davis. Like, Jackson Hayes never really worked out. You know, they tried a bunch of different guys. Like, Christian Wood is another one they tried. Like, that didn't really work out. You know, maybe that's the route they go with, especially because he is someone that's a little bit more NBA ready in terms of just his age and his physicality and things like that. You know, we went back and forth on a couple different options. I know you wrote something over there, so I don't know if you have any particular fits that you want to talk about where you think Zach Edey fits in nicely, but there are options out there for him. And I do think that, you know, if he were to get picked anywhere between like 10 and 20, it would be warranted, because he's earned that respect to and prove that he belongs in the NBA at that level.
Yeah, I kind of base it on fit and some reporting that we've heard. Apparently, the Trailblazers are really interested. They pick 7 and 14. I think 7 might be a little bit of a reach, but they might be worried that somebody in between 7 and 14 would take him. And if you want a guy, you go get a guy. And they're trying to pair him, you know, with 2 other Canadians, Shaden Sharp and Delano Banton. So that's interesting. It intrigues me. Obviously, a big part of it is wanting somebody. I don't really like the Grizzlies fit. Apparently, they're really interested in him and think he has a lot of growth that he can continue to do as a player, not as a person. He is done growing. I hope he is 7'4", 7'5" is tall enough. But I also like the Thunder. Thunder, you know, we talked about them being big, a big man away, and they kind of can afford to just use a pick to be specific for a need. And you know, he can come in and play, you know, 16, 18, 20 minutes for a team. And again, like you mentioned, him being an upperclassman, we've seen it time and time again, guys who played, you know, 3-4 years in college, they're ready to come in right away and compete and play for high stakes. We saw it last year at a different level with Trayce Jackson-Davis, but he was already ready to come in. I feel like that's the most recent example of a big who doesn't have necessarily the size, but also played at an Indiana college, big rivals of the Boilermakers. But that's the kind of way that goes. Now, we'll talk about specific team fits after a quick break, a little more about the Raptors, who I think could also be a fit for Zach Edey, but they have some other options as well, as do some teams that are building around their young talent. So quick break, we'll get back to it. All right, so the Raptors' lottery pick belongs to the Spurs, but it doesn't mean the Raptors won't be active on draft nights, because this is the first year of the two-day NBA draft. The Raptors select 19th and 31st. Pick 31 is the first pick in the second round, which is the first pick of the second day of the draft, and apparently a lot of teams may be trying to trade for that overnight. But the Raptors have a lot of needs that they could address. Masai Ujiri said it's backup point guard, wing defense, and front court depth. Zach Edey certainly fits the front court depth need. Who knows if it'll be around at 19. But as far as Raptors addressing their needs, KI, what are you thinking that they should do and that they could do when their pick rolls around there on the clock?
Yeah, I do think in the range the Raptors are picking in, there are a lot of intriguing guard prospects. You know, I want to start with players who I don't think will be available, but names to monitor if they are. You should, you know, be pretty pumped these guys fell to the Raptors. Devin Carter out of Providence is one who, he was a prospect who I actually wasn't that high on the first time I evaluated him. And then guys that I really respect around the industry started talking about him really highly. And I was like, all right, I got to go back and watch more of this guy, because I clearly had the wrong read. And, you know, he kind of won me over as a physical, tough, You know, he's a guy that ended up being like 25 point per game scorer at Providence. He was Big East player of the year. NBA ready type prospect. Jared McCain out of Duke is another one who I don't think he's going to be around for the Raptors at 19, but I really like him as, you know, a 3-and-D type player. He's a connective playmaker. He can play the one or the two. You know, he's young, so he fits their timeline. And then another one who his draft range seems to be all over the place, and I'm still so high on him. I really feel strongly that he's going to be a good NBA player is Isaiah Collier out of USC. Maybe part of it is because I got to see him a couple times this season, but you know, he's just so big and he looks like a running back more than he, I mean, if a running back was, you know, 6'4", more than he looks like a
Derrick Henry NBA basketball player. NBA.
Yeah. Derrick Henry. Yeah. Essentially Derrick Henry on an NBA court is what Isaiah Collier is. That should have been my player comparison. Maybe he will be there at 19 for the Raptors. And he does seem like the type of player that like Masai Ujiri would love to take a swing on because he was the number one overall prospect going into his freshman season. He had a weird hand injury that kind of screwed up the middle of his year. He never really seemed to get back into a rhythm. I don't know, but like, you know, again, I say all these guys have some shortcomings, like jump shot is another one of his concerns. But as far as like getting downhill, getting to the rim, finishing through contact, playmaking, like he's capable of doing all those things. And that would be a diamond in the rough for a team like the Raptors at 19. But, you know, as for guys that I actually expect to be available, I really like Bub Carrington or Carlton Carrington out of Pittsburgh, just because I used Emmanuel Quickley actually as his like plays like comparison, because I do think that they're kind of like similar, like herky jerky shot creators, talented offensive players that are limited defensively because of their size and stature, but you know, has a ton of potential. I think he'd be a good fit for the Raptors. Keyshawn George out of Miami, that's someone that you and I have both talked about that we're both a fan of. You know, he's a big playmaker. He's a 6'7" guard. So right there, like that's enough to check the boxes for Masai Ujiri and the Raptors and what they usually like to target it as a big wing. He shot 40% from three, I think on like 140 attempts this season. So not exactly a small sample size. So he kind of fits a need for a big wing who has the potential to defend at a high level and shoot the three. You know, we're talking about backup bigs. I think, you know, Zach Edey is someone that definitely makes sense, especially because the Raptors do have a history of wanting to bring Canadians into their building because, you know, those types of players have a little bit more pride for what it means to play for Toronto and play for Canada's team. Another one that I have my eye on, another backup big that I have my eye on for the Raptors, Khalil Ware, out of Indiana. He's a player who was one of the top prospects in the country going into his freshman season at Oregon. It didn't really work out the way that he wanted to. You know, he really wasn't ready physically to play at the NCAA level. He was getting banged around down low. It was way too, you know, he wasn't as physical as he needed to be. Transferred to Indiana, proved that he can be, you know, a shot blocker, a rim runner, a lob catcher. He's knocked down a couple threes. Like he's someone that has shown the potential to step outside and stretch the floor a little bit. So, you know, he's another player who I think kind of fits what the Raptors are looking for in a versatile, mobile, athletic big that kind of fits nicely with the core that they're trying to put in place with, you know, Scotty and with RJ and those guys. So, you know, those are some players that I have on my radar. I don't know if there's anybody that you want to add to the mix or if any of those players are catching your eyes or ears of, yeah, they'd be really good Toronto Raptors. But, you know, to me, those are the players I'm looking at.
You know, it's funny you say that. I'm going to give a spoiler because at the end of this show, we're going to shout out a few of our favorite prospects in this draft, and you just named two of them. And maybe it's my ACC bias. Maybe it's my Wake Forest bias because I'm glad that Bub Carrington and Keyshawn George will no longer be tearing my alma mater up because we felt both of their wrath this past year. But I like both of those guys. I know I saw some like Raptors Reddit fan fiction, you know, thinking that, you know, maybe Topic's draft stock falls so far because of the injury that he falls to 19. Doubt that's the case, but I do think it's really interesting because so many guys that we talked about similar to Zach Edey, you know, they could go 6 or 7, but if whoever picks 6 or 7 decides they aren't into that guy, well, not 7 because the Trailblazers pick 7 to 14, but like if a guy is like maybe going 8, but then they don't go 8, they could slide all the way to 19. So definitely, the Raptors could end up, you know, getting really, really fortunate. And you talk about that 2013 draft and the fact that Giannis went 15 and Rudy Gobert went 27. And you can think back, and again, Raptors fans, maybe close your ears, but if you go back and think about it, it's on record how hard Masai Ujiri was trying to trade up to get Giannis Antetokounmpo in a draft where it was perceived to be not a lot of talent. Who knows if he becomes who he is? Maybe he was destined to become who he is, regardless of where he landed. But if there's any executive that you probably should trust in this situation to see a diamond in the rough and see talent when there isn't talent. It is Masai Ujiri. So I'm really interested to see, you know, kind of where he takes it with this. But I'm right with you there on the names that you mentioned. Also pretty cool, Keyshawn George. He has some Canada ties as well. I don't know if you mentioned that, you kind of broke up for a second, but he has some Canada ties as well. His dad played professionally in Canada. So there's your Gil Facto of the pod. Now, I mentioned while the Raptors don't have their lottery pick because it belongs to the Spurs. They pick 4 and 8. They're putting around Victor Wembanyama. They kind of have a lot of options. Do you think that they maybe package them? Do you think the best course of action is to just use those picks and get young talent around Vic? Or they just kind of have everything at their disposal pretty much?
Yeah, I mean, if they have an opportunity to package either of those picks or trade one of them to get a star player, like Trae Young is the player that keeps coming to mind because the Hawks seem to be pretty open to trading him. And I think that, you know, you and I have talked about how he would fit with Victor Wembanyama on here before. Just the idea that Victor Wembanyama can kind of make up for what he lacks defensively. And then, you know, Vic has one of the best passers in the NBA, feeding him the rock after an entire season of not really having a point guard who was capable of doing that. Trae Jones ended up doing a good job of that, but you know what I mean? Doing it as high of a level as Trae Young does. Like if a player like that becomes available, I think they should trade the pick or picks, plural, no question. But, you know, if they do stand in and make picks, I do think there are going to be two players who are available at that range that fit in really well next to Victor Wembanyama. You know, on my mock draft, I'm going to have Stephon Castle out of UConn going off the board to the Spurs at number 4. And then one of my personal favorites, Dalton Knecht out of Tennessee, going off the board at number 8. So that would kind of fix their need for a point guard. That would fix their need for perimeter shooting and floor spacing around Victor Wembanyama. And those are two guys who, you know, Castle was a freshman this year. Dalton Knecht was a senior. So it's a nice kind of mix of ready, NBA ready, you know, kind of like win now talent with Dalton Knecht, but then also, you know, a developmental diamond in Stephon Castle as someone who is a jack of all trades who can fill multiple roles, like I already talked about. And you know, if he figures out that jump shot, then that becomes a really, really terrifying pairing in San Antonio. So they do have a lot of options at their disposal. I know Reed Shepard is another player they reportedly really, really like. You know, maybe Nikola Topic, like I said, falls to them at number 8, and they look at themselves and they say, hey, like, we can't let the sky fall any further. We're willing to allow him to take that Ben Simmons year, that Joel Embiid year, that Michael Porter Jr. year, you know, that 1 year off, where Chet Holmgren, another example of that, like that 1 year off, Blake Griffin is another one that seems to just really like expedite rookies' success in the NBA. We've seen it, you know, I just rattled off multiple instances that happened. So I don't see why Topic couldn't be any different if he lands in San Antonio. So those are a couple players I'm looking at for the Spurs.
No, I agree completely. Like, especially, like, you know, you have two picks, you're building, and obviously we know that franchise is not really expecting, they're expecting to be better this upcoming year, but I don't think they're expecting to, like, oh man, we gotta have somebody that helps us win now. They're looking at a 3 to 5 year plan. We talked about it last episode. Like, we're about a year and a half, 2 years away from having a conversation about Victor Wembanyama being the best player in the NBA, and I don't think that's an exaggeration. And once you have everything in order by then, that's all that really matters. So I think that's interesting. Now, I talked about the Raptors picking at 19. Now we'll circle back to the Raptors again at 31, because there is a certain point guard out of USC, not named Isaiah Collier, who has now been linked to the Raptors at 31, according to his agent, Rich Paul. And if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, it's Bronny James. Apparently, Masai Ujiri loves Bronny James. So what do you think about Bronny to the Raptors? But generally speaking, now we're much closer. You and I have had some passionate takes about Bronny James and his NBA future. It's pretty cool to see. Like, he just did sneaker shopping with Complex. It was cool to see him do media. He didn't do much media while he was in high school, and did some while he was in college at USC. But now I see him kind of blossom into his own person, in addition to his own player. It's pretty cool to see ahead of his draft.
Yeah, you and I both feel the same way about Bronny James, and that's, you know, he's not going to get drafted in the second round just because his dad is LeBron James. Like, I think he's going to get drafted in the second round because I think he legitimately has a chance to be a better NBA player than he was at the college level. Part of the reason for that is because his role in the NBA will be much more defined. You know, he's going to be more of a 3-and-D combo guard. He can defend at a high level already. You know, maybe the size is a little bit worrisome because he came in at 6'1.5" without shoes on at the NBA draft combine, when I think he was listed at like 6'4" at USC, but he still has a 210-pound frame. He still has a 6'7" wingspan. Like, he has the physical tools to defend at a high level at the NBA level. And, you know, he's someone that's an intelligent defender. He puts himself in the right positions. He's, you know, sharp on his rotations. He's physical, and he has, you know, active hands on the ball. But, you know, we talk about swing skills, like his 3-point shot will be the swing skill that determines if he sticks in the NBA or not. He has crisp shot mechanics, but he shot like 26% from three as a freshman at USC. You know, a lot of that is because, you know, he's trying to create his own shot and he's not a great shot creator at this point. He's still a very raw offensive product, but he's a connective playmaker who keeps the ball moving. The ball doesn't stick. And I think most importantly, like, he's extremely self-aware and understanding of what it's going to succeed at the NBA. And of course, a lot of that has to do with his dad being in his ear and playing with guys that, you know, have carved out roles, making a living playing next to guys like LeBron James, like playing next to guys like his father. And how those types of players can become elevated, you know, just by playing their role at a high level, being a star in their role. So, you know, that's where, you know, the player comparisons that Bronny James gave for himself, like, I really think that he could be a Jalen Suggs type player. I really think that, you know, at his ceiling, maybe a Derek White type player, if he really, really grinds and works on his game. I'm not saying he will get to the level that Derek White, Jalen Suggs is at, you know, overnight, but over time, like, you know, that's the kind of mold that he should be trying to fill, which is, you know, hang your hat on the defensive end, be able to guard multiple positions on the perimeter and do it at a high level. You know, be a connective playmaker, be willing to move the ball. Don't be someone that is trying to force shots on offense or trying to get your own in isolation, things like that. Be ready to catch and shoot and make sure that defenses have to be honest on you when you are shooting the ball, because, you know, Jalen Suggs is someone that came into the NBA and his biggest question mark was jump shot. He almost hit 40% of his threes this past season. So on top of him becoming one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, he's also become a knockdown shooter. Derek White, before he came to the Celtics, biggest question mark, he shot 34% from three. He comes to Boston and this guy, it seems like he makes more shots than he misses. Like, if he misses a shot, you're shocked that it didn't go down. Like, that's a level that Bronny James needs to get at to be successful, because there's just not a long history of undersized guards who can't shoot the ball that stick in the NBA. It doesn't matter how good you are defensively. And I do think he's capable of getting to that potential of being that 3-and-D caliber player, but it's going to take time for him. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what situation he ends up in to maximize that potential.
Yeah, I'll say real quick, it does make sense that, you know, the Raptors would be interested in him, maybe not necessarily at 31, but I talked about their need for a backup point guard. You talked about, you know, Derek White. You know, he compared himself to also Davion Mitchell and Drew Holiday. A guy I've mentioned a lot is Deuce McBride in New York. We saw the impact he was able to have on their playoff run. Another thing I'll say, you know, he's 6'1 without shoes, but hey, you play basketball with shoes on. So he is probably a little over 6'2 for those of the people who are really, really worried about his size. But I do think there's a fit. You know, he's a super smart player. Those genes aren't anything to scoff at. He didn't necessarily get the height, or he got some of the athleticism. So I think that it's going to work out for him. He will be all right in the league. I think he'll carve a lane. The biggest thing for him is he knows the lane that he needs to carve. So when it comes to the Raptors, he also could play off the ball, because Scottie Barnes is a guy who will play a lot of point guard at 6'9", forward and point forward or whatever, and he'll have guys. It's important to knock down a shot, whether it's Grady Dick, Emmanuel Quickley, Bronny James, having guys who can play off the ball. Since my shout out was going to go to Keyshawn George and Bob Carrington, by the way, let me correct myself. Keyshawn George's dad is from Canada and represented Canada internationally. So if the Raptors get him, his dad is from Montreal. So you could see a link there. I could see that happening more and more now that I clarify myself on that. But because they were going to be my shout out, I mentioned Scottie Barnes. Shout out to Scottie Barnes, man. The future of the Raptors franchise, no surprise about that. But as of today, 5-year contract extension worth up to $270 million. Emmanuel Quickley said on Instagram, dinner is on you. I understand that quick, because, you know, he's going to be negotiating something this offseason, but it's not going to be $270 million. Obviously, Scottie Barnes has to make all NBA to get that, but well-deserved. 22-year-old All-Stars don't happen very often, so the Raptors have committed to him, and I'm sure that the success is soon to follow. Who are you going to say is your favorite prospect in this draft as we wrap up here?
Man, I mean, we already touched on a couple of them. Like, Dalton Knecht is someone that I really feel strongly that he's going to be able to make an instant impact at the NBA level because of the way that he can score the ball. I touched on, you know, someone like Isaiah Collier, who I firmly believe that he's going to be better than what people are projecting him right now. So for the sake of getting new names into the mix, I'm gonna bring up two players. One player is Ron Holland from the G League Ignite, who was in conversation for the number one overall pick at one point. It seems like his draft stock has kind of slid a little bit, and I don't necessarily understand why, because I think he has the potential to be the most versatile defender in this draft. He is someone who plays with a high motor. He rebounds. He runs in transition. You know, he's a dogged defender. And he averaged 20 points per game with the G League Ignite, and he can't really shoot and isn't a great shot creator. So if you're finding a way to score 20 points per game without those skills, like when those skills inevitably do come along, because he is a talented basketball player, he's coordinated, he's skilled, like he fits everything you're looking for in a prototypical switchy, versatile wing in today, forward in today's NBA. Like once those skills come along, what will his offensive game look like if he's already averaging 20 points per game in a professional league as an 18-year-old? So he is someone that I don't know where he's going to fall on draft night. I know, like, I was looking at ESPN's mock draft today. They had him fall into the Kings at number 13 overall. Like, to me, that's crazy. I have him as the number 6 best prospect in this class. If he were to fall beyond the top 10, someone is going to get a steal in this draft, because I feel really strongly about Ron Holland. Another player that I want to give a shout out to, this is a player who is more of an NBA ready, kind of like win now type player, and that's Tristan Da Silva out of Colorado. He is someone who I think, you know, he won't be a lottery pick, at least I don't think. I have him mock going 17 overall to the Lakers. To me, he is just someone who can fill multiple roles. He shot 40% from three this past season. He can create a little bit, like play make for others a little bit with the ball in his hands, but he doesn't need the ball in his hands by any means. He could stand in the corner and knock down, catch and shoot threes if that's what his role is. You know, he's a big wing. I think he's like listed at, I don't know what his official combine measurement came in at, but I have him at 6'9". 6'9", 217 on my board right here. So, you know, he has the size and the length to defend multiple positions, whether that's, you know, power forwards through probably shooting guards. And you know, he's a little bit older. He's a prospect that came along late in his career, but I do feel like he's someone that can make an instant impact. So, you know, those are two of, we'll call them my guys, in addition to guys like Isaiah Collier and Dalton Connect that I already talked about earlier.
So there you have it. If you don't know any other names, Isaiah Collier, Dalton Connect, Tristan Da Silva, Ron Holland, Bub Carrington, and Keyshawn George, names to watch out for as this NBA draft is upon us. We will be back here on NBA Sound System to talk a little bit about what the Raptors did, how many Canadians were taken in this draft, and then we'll spin it forward because free agency is upon us as well. Thanks again for tuning in to NBA Sound System. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like it, pass it on to a friend as well. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. We will catch you back here for some free agency talk. See you.